There's no place quite like home, right? This is the Real Crime Podcast.
Christina
and Kristen,
and first of all, I have to give a huge thank you to Scott from my office because he is the one who actually recommended today's story for all of you. This one is really, really close to home, to say the least. Yeah, exactly. Two of the towns in question. So just to kind of put it into perspective, we're in the New Milford area. And two of the towns that come up in this are actually Bridgewater, which is like one town over from us.
We're in Connecticut.
And then Newtown, Connecticut. So also super, super close.
Two towns over.
Yeah, exactly. And the house in question that we're going to be talking about today is actually 89 Poverty Hollow Road in Newtown, Connecticut. And we're going to be discussing the mysterious disappearance of Elizabeth Heath. So, back in 2005, a father and son team purchased a house that was, they state it was in foreclosure or on the verge of. I didn't find records of that when I was kind of like, you know, checking into the property and like the history and stuff of it. That's kind of how the story goes, that it was definitely deeply discounted at the very least. So something about it was in trouble. Someone was in some financial trouble and lost the house. Again, this was in Newtown. It was a large horse property, so a decent amount of acreage. There was a main house. There were a couple of barns on the property. This father and son actually made the purchase, according to Buried in the Backyard, which is on Oxygen Channel. They did a focus on this story. And in 2005, they purchased it, but then in 2010, they had already renovated, I guess, the apartment above the barn in question, and were going into the basement and tearing up some moldy floorboards and that kind of stuff. And they discovered what is being referred to as a dry well. So a dry well is basically a hollow space where excess water from underground can collect.
A cistern,
yes. Yeah. So I always thought a cistern was something else.
I had literally never heard of cistern until this case.
I had only heard of the word cistern, like, used regularly in the movie The Lighthouse, because...
Never seen it.
It's a great movie. Robert Pattinson's character always had to, like, go out and, like, mix the cistern or something random like that. It was, like, part of his daily job.
Interesting.
It was weird.
So, not a fan of him, so...
Really?
I've also never heard of the movie.
It's so good. It's so... You have to watch it.
Based on his performance in Twilight, I'm all set.
No! He's actually a great actor. So he's actually a really fantastic actor. I think Twilight was sort of his ticket to be able to do whatever he wanted to. But it's a fantastic movie. Did you see the movie The Witch? Okay, well, you have to see that, because, okay, like, that's so, right up your alley.
Again, you're going to tell me all these movies.
I know, you're and I'll be like, never going to watch them.
There's no list.
Okay, so anyway. So, cistern, dry well.
Whatever you want to call it.
Place to collect excess water.
A space under the floorboard.
Exactly. So, Kenneth and Jordan Wright, who were the father-son team who purchased this property... they're out in this barn. It was actually essentially an apartment with a basement below. And at the time of the discovery, there were tenants that were staying and renting the apartment above this basement where they discovered the dry well.
The ones with the dog?
Yes. So according to an article written by Melissa Bruin for the Danbury News Times back in 2010, at the time of the discovery, the tenants had this dog that would like pull towards this area and would just go absolutely crazy in the basement. And they couldn't figure out what it was or what drove it nuts, but they just sort of avoided it and didn't go down there if they needed to. So over this drywall, there was this large concrete disc, which is usually how it is. They slid the disc away and they were kind of anxious to see what they were going to find. And like in my mind, owning a home that was in foreclosure, anytime we have to rip into anything, I'm always like, please let there be money. Please let there be just like bags of money.
I feel like if there's a foreclosure, those owners would have taken that
money. I don't know. Like maybe they didn't even know it was in there, you know, but I'm sure. Always hoping for the bags of money. I've never found the bags of money. Neither did these guys.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So what they did find were some bedding, like some older bedding, some pillowcases, a comforter. There were some plastic bags. And when they started to pull this stuff out of the drywall, they discovered a femur. And
human.
Yes, a human femur. So there are actually a couple of reports. According to that documentary on Oxygen, it says that both father and son found the femur, whereas other articles and things that I wrote on it, it says just the son found it.
Funny, I found an article with just the father found it.
Just the father found it. Okay. So
I don't know why we can't get that story straight.
But either way, eventually they obviously both knew about it.
Someone found it.
They
called the police.
Immediately called the Newtown Police Department, and rightfully so, the Newtown Police Department automatically treated it as a homicide. Most people don't randomly just end up in their bed linens in a dry well in bone.
Generally, in bone form,
you know? Yeah. So after pulling everything out, the police ended up collecting a full skeleton
and
in the dry well.
Well, was it the police or was it the state troopers? I don't know if it was the town police or if they called the state troopers in immediately.
The authorities, yeah. Probably a mix of the two. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, Newtown is a pretty mellow town. It's a pretty safe town. It's not exactly like the murder capital of Connecticut, so it's probably not something that they're used to dealing with. And at this point, if it's skeletal remains, it's also not something that's from, you know, yesterday.
Right.
You know, like it didn't just happen.
It's not fresh.
Right. So let's give you a little bit of back story on this property, 89 Poverty Road. Or Poverty Holly. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I can't talk. Wow. 89 Poverty Hollow Road in Newtown.
There it is.
Woo. So John and Elizabeth Heath were the former owners of the property. They had lived in the main house next to the barn, but the barn was obviously part of their property. At that time, from what I'm getting, John's father used to stay in the apartment above that drywall space on occasion.
Not often, though, because he did not get along with Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, right, exactly. But he definitely did, like, when he came by and stayed over, that was sort of his place to stay.
I didn't read this anywhere, but what I'm gathering from hearing about him mm-hmm. is that I'm assuming he was an awful alcoholic and terrible human.
That's kind of the gist of what I've gotten to, where, you know, he made, I guess, some weird remarks from time to time, and I guess he treated the children a little oddly from time to time. John and Elizabeth did have a daughter, Megan, and they lived in this house with their daughter, Megan.
Yes.
You know, according to public records, the house was actually built in 1979. I'm not sure if they had it built or they moved into a pre-existing home. It could also be that maybe it was a pre-existing home that they sort of renovated at some point. But either way, that's where they lived. So again, according to Oxygen's Buried in the Backyard, Elizabeth's neighbor, Jill Milson, described Elizabeth as kind of a hippie and earthy in the best way possible. Elizabeth loved her Chesapeake Bay retrievers, which she showed up and down the Northeast. She also described her as being a bit overweight when they first moved to Newtown. And it wasn't just Jill insulting her. There's actually, like, some relevance. But, like, my chubby butt heard that. And I was like, what? Why does that matter, Jill? What, like, what's the big deal? Like, so sometimes we get a little chubby. It's not a big deal, all right?
She's a four-year-old.
Exactly. I was like, just get over it, okay? She's a hardworking mom. But it's okay.
There's a reason she mentioned it.
Exactly. So Jill goes on to explain to Buried in the Backyard about how Elizabeth and John were incredibly friendly at first, but they sort of seemed to drift apart as they lived there in the house together, stating that Elizabeth had decided that she wanted to go on and pursue a new career. She wanted to better herself, change her lifestyle, you know, really do some different things.
She actually wanted to study to become a child psychologist.
Yes. And she was working tremendously hard on that.
Yeah.
And she actually lost a good amount of the weight.
Yes.
So she felt great. She looked totally different. Like, if you see pictures of her from when she and John first got married.
Yeah, she lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
There's even a video of her showing
the dogs. Yeah. I mean, she, like, halved herself. Like, It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, good on her. I only wish, right?
No need.
Yeah, I could quarter myself, you know, just like a little, anyway. Little sliver. Anyway. So, you know, the rift between John and Elizabeth seemed to deepen, and Elizabeth actually went to her neighbor Jill shortly before Elizabeth's disappearance and essentially said, like, look, while we figure out what we need to do, can I come here as a safe place? Because I don't always feel safe in my home.
So that's saying something.
Absolutely. I mean, I've never called you up and said, hey, you know, Cole's cranky today. Like, can I come to you for a safe place to live?
The answer is always yes.
I know. Thank you. I appreciate it. Me and the kitties.
Have a safe space.
And I also want to keep in mind that not only was she looking for herself, but she was looking for her and her daughter to go if they needed to.
Not just her.
Exactly.
Her daughter.
If they needed to get out of any type
of important
situation. Very important. Very important to me. So Elizabeth actually suddenly just kind of disappeared, according to her husband. So her husband woke up one day, and according to him, John said that she just simply wasn't there. The only thing that he noticed that was different was that there was $600 missing.
From where, though, I'm wondering?
I don't know, because it's not like you generally, unless they had, like, a cash stash somewhere.
Like, he just checked that?
That's...
And counted it?
Exactly. That's weird. Or, like that's the first thing he thinks of. Like, did she run off or what have you? He immediately starts calling Elizabeth's friends and family, and specifically Elizabeth's brother, to find out if he knew where she was, like where she could be, where she could have gone. Elizabeth's brother, Aubrey, actually told Buried in the Backyard that it wasn't totally out of the ordinary for a member of his family to take a bit of, like, a, you know, a walkabout to sort
of...
Exactly. To clear their head a little bit, reset themselves a little bit, but...
Well, after a couple days, that's...
Right. And
worrisome at that point.
Exactly. When no one heard from her, I think everyone, including her brother, realized it was much more than that. So according to an article, again, written by Melissa Brune for the Danbury News Times, Elizabeth was reported missing by her husband, John, on April 6th, 1984, after she'd been missing for a couple of days.
Right.
He was obviously immediately questioned by police.
He being John.
John, yes. Husband. John was immediately...
First suspect,
and I think just to try and figure out, like...
What the hell happened.
Exactly. What might have happened. Interestingly enough, you know, after the initial of him explaining, well, we were, you know, kind of rough and patchy, we were going through a divorce, but we were fairly civil, Nothing in the home was out of place except for this missing $600. And then a short while later, he kind of came back to the police and was like, yeah, well, I just have this feeling that, you know, she ran off to India with her boyfriend.
Random.
Super random. Like, this boyfriend was never mentioned before. He wasn't immediately brought up as a suspect. Like, clearly, according to John, he knew about some boyfriend. And, I mean, India's sort of a random destination. And I feel
very
like...
random.
Right. Like, it's like, you don't just sort of wake up one morning and decide to go to India. You know what I mean?
Some
I guess you could.
Do.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't wake up in the morning and just simply decide to go to India.
Your four-year-old daughter.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, that's the other thing. So their daughter was still asleep in her bed, woke up as well, and mom was just missing, which I can't even wrap my head around. You know, that's kind of crazy. So Megan, when asked, actually... recalled, and Megan again is Elizabeth and John's daughter.
Four-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Little girl. So I have a four-year-old, and I don't know that I would always 100% believe everything that comes out of her mouth.
You mean always or
always.
Never?
Like, sometimes. sometimes. She's a big storyteller, too, though. So she apparently recalls her mother coming in the middle of the night to say goodbye the day that she left, which... to everyone around seemed to kind of solidify the fact
that she has run off
that she's
to
just,
India.
Exactly. That she just picked up and left.
With her new boyfriend,
leaving her
that
child
she lost
behind.
All this weight for.
Right, exactly. Left her career that she was so passionate about, left her daughter who she loved so dearly, left her friends and family, never made contact with them again, just ran off with this boyfriend to India. So obviously. You know, neighbors, friends, family were just like, this is absolutely crazy. Everyone was very surprised. They were really confused by the entire thing. This is funny. These are like in my notes. So there's a really quick aside because I was watching the whole Oxygen Buried in the Backyard. And there's this detective that they interview and who worked on the investigation in 1984. And like... right now or whenever they filmed this, which wasn't that long ago,
right.
He literally looks like he's maybe in his late 30s, early 40s.
Okay, so I completely disagree with you.
Really?
Because he looks like he's had a lot of work done.
You think so?
But I actually looked so... because you did send me your notes on this before, so I actually looked him up.
Mm-hmm.
He started on the police force in 98. So I don't know that he was on this case in 84.
That's so crazy, because,
did speak... I also watched it.
Yeah!
He was speaking like he was on it.
Yeah, like, that's how they investigated it.
But that wasn't,
like,
the beginning of his career in general.
Okay.
So maybe... I don't know. Because I Googled him.
Okay, cool.
Also, he, just as an aside, was the leading investigator to Sandy Hook, which was only 2 years after this body was found.
Right, which
so
is
crazy. He's had a crazy career.
Yeah, he really has. That's nuts. So, I mean, it's just kind of crazy because, like, I was looking at him and I'm like this, you know, it's like late night. I'm watching this and I'm just trying to figure out, like, who is this guy and why has he not aged? Like, if he was...
I'm pretty sure some work has been done. He doesn't look...
Who knows? It just, everything was so smooth. It was so smooth. Anyway. skin was so smooth and tight.
No.
So, about a week or so after John reported Elizabeth missing, John's mom, conveniently, actually calls the police to say, oh, she saw Elizabeth in a car in the driveway at the Poverty Hollow Road house, and then once Elizabeth saw her, she just took off. And, again, nobody ever saw her.
That seems convenient.
Yeah, exactly. So, a really, really sad note in this is, while I was watching all of these interviews and stuff on the special, is Aubrey, Elizabeth's brother, was detailing how he spent so much time having to comfort his niece, Megan, because she was so young and really didn't understand what was happening. And, I mean, I can't even imagine, like, especially mother and daughter bonds when little girls are growing up. I can't even imagine if I just never came back one day. Like, I don't know what Cosette would do.
So what was kind of weird to me about watching that was her relationship with... well, we haven't gotten there yet. But I'll just...
Okay. Go for it.
With Raquel, his new wife, which we have not gotten to, which we
We'll get into that in a second.
She apparently, according to Aubrey, they had like an instant connection and she kind of just took over the role.
Yeah.
The motherly role.
Yeah.
Within like 6 months of Elizabeth.
He like moved her into the house. Like they wed very quickly afterwards. It's crazy. And we will get into that in more detail. So, yeah, I mean, it was just kind of crazy. And that to me was just, whenever there's kids involved in anything, like, I mean, I don't care what kind of monster you are, but anytime you involve children in it, it's really, like, it's just not fair. It's just not fair because they don't deserve that. Right. Like, they literally don't want anything other than to be loved and cuddled and snuggled and whatever else.
That kind of sets the tone for the rest of their life.
Right, exactly. I mean, talk about future abandonment issues. Like, that's going to breed healthy relationships for the rest of her life. So about 4 months after Elizabeth went missing, John actually completed the divorce proceedings, that were finalized at the Danbury courthouse. And that was kind of fun because I'm watching this documentary and I was like, hey, I know where that is.
I showed it to Rachel. I was like, yeah, so I've been there a million times. She's like, why have you been there? Speeding tickets.
I mean, I had to like pull some documents there one day. So like I did like paperwork searches and stuff and like had to pull some things from there. So I was just like, oh, hey, I've been there like a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun.
I just went to college right across the street.
Exactly. It's like my in-laws are around the corner. So right around that time. So this is 4 months after Elizabeth just, you know, up and left. And as far as everyone knows, ran off to India with her boyfriend. John started to begin a relationship with a family friend named Raquel. So Raquel had known the family for quite some time, even prior to the disappearance. So, you know, it's one of those things where we're all looking at it, obviously, with very skeptical eyes, and we're like, well, that's sudden. Like, what are you thinking, John?
Right.
But at the same time...
And we're also separated.
Exactly. He was probably already mentally moving on if they were going through a divorce. He was probably, you know, thinking about wanting to have a completed family, so his daughter had the mom experience and all of that. And
so no one was really shocked.
Exactly. And there were a lot of people who are still kind of under this absurd belief that Elizabeth just picked up and left one day. 6 months later, John actually asked Raquel to marry him.
So we're, what, 10 months from when she disappeared?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 10 months after, because it was 4 months after when they started dating.
So not even a year later.
No, not even a year later, he was engaged and getting married.
Oh, God. If I had indeed run off to India with someone and I found out that my
ex-husband
or ex-wife...
Right.
Of, at that point, 6 months...
Right.
...was engaged to someone else, I'd come back and murder them both.
Honestly, they'd be the ones in the dry well.
You can't get over me that fast.
Crazy. I know, seriously. It's like, you better sit and cry over me
like
for
engaged,
a while.
Not just, like, dating. Dating, fine, but engaged.
Engaged and married. I'm like, okay, one,
and they
this
got
is the
married
problem.
Quickly after their engagement, too.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem like it was a... You know, it's not like they were engaged for 3 years or something like that, and they really waited it out. And again, you know, they did already know each other prior to.
I don't care.
But still, that to me is...
Too fast.
Yeah, exactly. You need a little time. Digest each other. Get to know each other. Move in together for a brief period of time. And interestingly enough, shortly after all of the engagement and such, he added Raquel's name to the house. To the deed of the house, exactly.
Which also weird.
Like, why is that necessary?
I still don't understand why that.
I don't know. So, okay. Jill Milson, this neighbor.
The neighbor, yeah.
Yeah. She is fantastic. She is literally sitting there just, like, spilling tea, and she's like, so. Like,
I also
you know?
Love her accent.
I know. So, this neighbor, Jill Milson, who, you know, spoke to Buried in the Backyard, you know, she said, honestly, this whole disappearance, basically it was the talk of Poverty Hollow.
How could it not be?
Exactly. And everybody had an opinion on it. And that's basically what they sat on their front porches chit-chatting about, you know,
why
sunny days, digging in the garden. Like, what do you think actually happened to Elizabeth? And she even said, you know, a lot of them even questioned if she just wasn't alive. Like, if Elizabeth just wasn't alive anymore.
Not just missing.
Although they also didn't have any proof or knew what had happened.
Right.
All right. So now let's Fast forward to 2010.
When they uncovered a human femur.
Exactly.
Guess whose it was?
The Wrights, you know, had pulled this skeleton, this full skeleton of an unidentified body out of the dry well at 89 Poverty Hollow Road in Newtown. And luckily, investigators were able to identify the body as Elizabeth Heath's, as well as finding incredibly distinct bedding.
Which is really lucky.
Yeah, yeah, because this is actually, like, this is another thing just to remember.
How they tie, okay.
Exactly. So it's definitely something that that we're going to come back to, because the bedding is sort of what sealed the deal, if you will. So this skull had suffered multiple fractures to the skull. Or I'm sorry, the skeleton had suffered multiple fractures to the skull.
The upper jaw had been traumatic. I can't
speak. We can't speak today. I don't know what's going on.
Traumatically? That doesn't sound right
at all.
Okay, anyway, it had been
Pulled apart
from the skull.
Right. It was...
The jaw was no longer attached.
Fractured, yep. There was a break in the arm that actually looked like a defensive wound. Like, someone had put their arm up and then it had almost been, like, snapped in half sort of thing.
Not two arms, but both bones in the arm.
Right. Both bones in the arm. So it was, like, a defensive thing. There was a broken shoulder bone. They believed the cause of death to be blunt force trauma.
There were four separate areas where her skull had been crushed.
Right. And they said it looked like a crime of passion. So it wasn't like just a random happening. You know, this wasn't like a robbery gone wrong. Obviously, someone didn't break into the house, know exactly where the $600 were, and then also know how to put her in the dry well.
Where the dry well was.
Exactly.
For that matter.
Or that there was a dry well.
Right.
You know? Because, I mean, let's face it, the two guys that bought the place,
right,
it took them 5 years to figure out that there was a dry well.
Right.
You know? Okay, so obviously, suspect number one is John Heath, Elizabeth's now ex-husband.
Who has conveniently moved on.
Right. And this is many years later. It's 26 years later. Lives have changed, all of that.
The little girl is grown up.
Yeah, the little girl is an adult.
30?
Yeah, yeah. And big spoiler alert, because they always do, the husband did.
He sure did.
He certainly did.
The daughter still refuses to
believe. She refuses to believe. She absolutely refuses to believe. And it's actually kind of interesting how they caught him. So motives were, you know, money, possibly jealousy. Like, maybe she's doing all these fantastic things in her life. And
moving
her,
forward.
Exactly.
Bettering herself.
Exactly. And her husband was just like, I can't do this anymore. And I love the way the investigators kind of went into all of this, because initially they pretended they were just following up on the cold case with John and his new wife, Raquel. By 2010, John was actually in very, very poor health. His memory was struggling. And when asked about Elizabeth, John and Raquel both had very negative things to say about her. Like, Raquel especially was just very, very down on her. Very, she was an awful mother. She just deserted her child. And
I think she wasn't necessarily just talking about her character, more of, like, in her head, Elizabeth just left and abandoned her child.
Well, so, no, like, absolutely, because that's what she believed.
I think that's why she was saying
herself,
not, like, necessarily about her character, because she had known her before.
Right, right. And, like, I think anyone that I know has been in one of those relationships where, like, you get the opinion of someone else from whomever you're in a relationship with, and then you are somehow out of that relationship and get to know that other person, and you're like, holy crap, like, they were just making it all up, you know? Like, it just wasn't real. It just wasn't real.
Familiar. I'm familiar.
So they were both just adamant about the fact that, you know, she absolutely ran away. So the investigator that was interviewed on Buried with the Backyard, the one with the fantastic complexion, you know, actually said it drove him to believe that they were both actually overcompensating a little bit. Like, maybe that they both had something to do with the disappearance of Elizabeth, which is interesting.
But then when they spoke to her,
We'll get there. So finally, investigators.
I always jump the gun.
It's okay. You're excited.
Just get excited.
So finally, when investigators turned the conversation to the dry well and their findings, Raquel's reaction was super genuine. You know, watching the recordings, listening to the recordings.
Because on the show, and on the Buried in the Backyard show, they played some of the interview.
You can hear her reaction. And her reaction is so genuine. It's like pure shock. Like, she cannot believe.
It kind of sounded to me like she was about to cry because she was like, what the hell?
Right. Like everything that she had known for the last 26 years, like, suddenly she woke up and said, oh my God, I'm living with an absolute monster, you know, like that sort of thing. Like, what actually happened? Why have you been lying to me? You must have known something about this.
She didn't say any of those things.
She didn't, but it's like, yeah, you can like feel it in her reaction. But John Heath, Elizabeth's ex-husband, was way too calm. Now, granted, he had a lot of health issues at this point.
Well, the thing is, he said his memory was like lapsed completely.
Yeah.
And, like, he couldn't recall things. But then when they got to this, he knew every single detail of everything.
Absolutely.
Except he, apparently, had no knowledge that there was a dry well.
Yeah.
What?
According to him, he hadn't... when he was asked about the dry well in the beginning, he's like, no, it's just always... It's been concrete underneath the barn.
There's nothing
just
there.
Concrete. There's nothing there.
But he knew every other square inch of that...
Everything.
Entire property, which was a big
all
property.
Of the details. Yeah, it's not small.
Oh, but you didn't know about that?
Yeah, okay. Had no idea.
Where your wife is buried?
So
of course you didn't know.
Right, exactly.
Convenient.
He definitely didn't have anything to do with it. So John was just way too calm through the whole interview process. And because of all of these reactions, investigators realized that Raquel was not likely involved. What's really interesting, though, is... John blamed his father, who, if you remember, he and Elizabeth did not get along.
Right.
The father and Elizabeth at all.
I mean, that's a likely story.
I mean, it is. But at the same time, it's one of those things where there's another detail that sort of pulls it back and lets us know, like, oh no, John, you're the bad guy here. You're definitely the bad guy.
Let's get to that one.
Okay. And what's really funny, too, is... John's like, oh no, my father must have done it, and he put her body in the dry well. The dry well that he knew absolutely nothing about and didn't think it existed.
His father knew about it.
Right, but his father, who didn't actually live at the property and occasionally visited, did know about it, and he's like, no, that's what happened. He put him in there.
Definitely.
He put her in there, yeah.
That makes sense.
Exactly. And the father, yes, the father's name was Chet, that's right, which I think is an interesting name, Chet.
It is. I like it.
I like it. I don't like him, but I like the name.
Yeah, it's all right.
So really, what's very, very cool is the nail in the coffin is, if you remember, Elizabeth's body was found in bedding.
And distinct bedding. Not just like any, you know, white linens or anything.
Exactly.
It was like
had a pattern to it.
Unusual pattern.
Exactly. Had a pattern, had, you know, unique linens, all of that kind of stuff. Now, if you remember... John's story from the beginning was that he woke up and Elizabeth just wasn't next to him.
And the $600 was also missing, but that was it. Nothing
that was
else
it.
Was missing.
Nothing was out of place at all. However, isn't it crazy that John woke up in a bed with absolutely no bed linens because that's what Elizabeth's body was wrapped up in?
We don't know that they were there bed linens until...
There's
the
a photograph.
The police went to an old friend of hers asking, because at this point... It's 20-something years later.
Right.
They don't remember really what she looks like. So they're trying to find photographs. They go to old friends. Hey, do you have any pictures of Elizabeth? A friend had a picture of her sitting on her bed holding her baby, Megan, as a baby, with John sitting next to her on the bed with those distinct linens. So
exactly.
They were her bed sheets.
They were her bed sheets. And he was then questioned again on all of this and... magically is still saying, nope, nothing was out of place. Nothing was gone.
Well, then he said, also his father had access to the home, so he could have done it and wrapped in the bed sheets.
Yeah.
But, like, you didn't notice that you weren't sleeping on anything?
Right. Like, you didn't notice it was a bare mattress and that there was nothing there.
I can tell you I would most definitely notice no matter how unsober I was.
Honestly, I would definitely notice if it was just a bare mattress. Like, that'd be so scritchy and uncomfortable.
Really uncomfortable and unsanitary, in my opinion.
Gross. So what's very, very cool is now they're like, okay, so we've got this sort of circumstantial evidence. We've got this scenario that works, but we've got to find a way to tie it to John. So police go in. Mm-hmm. They search the current home of John and Raquel. And you're thinking, it's 26 years later. What are the chances? Can you believe they still had a pillowcase from that set?
First of all, no, I can't believe, because that's disgusting.
Right.
That's what, a 30-year-old sheet at this point that you're resting your head on?
Cloth? Like, it's crazy.
So gross.
I don't even know.
Imagine the dust mites.
I mean, even if you wash them all the time.
Right.
But if you wash them enough, like, they're literally cheesecloth. Like, they're webbing.
Right.
There's strings that
makes
are attached.
Makes no sense.
Absolutely not.
Nonsense.
None at all. So at that point, when they found this pillowcase, they were able to pull it all together. The police arrested John for the murder of Elizabeth Heath, who was found guilty, sentenced, but however, due to his advanced illness, he actually died quickly into his sentence.
So basically, he kind of got away with it.
I mean, sort of.
He lived his entire life, raised his child, had a nice married life with his new wife.
I know.
Everything he ever wanted.
Yeah. And you know...
I'm sorry, he was only, what, 2 or 3 years in prison?
Yeah. Oh, very, very short.
Okay.
Very short.
I mean, like,
and I'm
you
sure
murdered someone and that's all?
With his advanced, you know, medical issues and stuff, there was probably a lot of, like, hospital time spent
right.
and that kind of stuff. So it wasn't really like he was in prison. Like, he didn't pay for his crimes.
That's what gets me.
Yeah, it's just never right. It also drives me absolutely mad that his daughter, Megan, still to this day stands by the fact that he was just such a fantastic father. He couldn't have done it. It's absolutely impossible.
Right. Especially
and,
with, like, people, I mean, so the crazy, another crazy thing is that, I guess Elizabeth, before she was killed,
mm-hmm.
Had gone to her sister-in-law. So John's half-brother or stepbrother?
I think half-brother.
Half-brother's wife
mm-hmm.
she went to
mm-hmm.
and said, he's going to kill me. If anything happens to me, you know that John did it. Now, no one knew that she was dead.
Right.
But this was, you know, once they found the body some
years
later.
It was like, oh my God.
That was part of the affidavit.
Yeah.
You know, that was used to convict him.
Yeah. And what honestly kills me is the fact that until they had to be, you know, removed from the house or removed themselves from
mm-hmm.
the house, he lived in a house with his daughter.
And new wife.
And new wife.
On top of her buried corpse.
Above a dead body, fully knowing his first wife
it's
was
really
dead and
up.
Buried. I mean, I like couldn't wrap my psyche around that. You
right.
know what I mean? Like I literally couldn't.
Also, the half brother like goes on to talk about, you know, he told investigators that John, when they were younger, used to hit him, and you know
mm-hmm.
if he got anger, or if, you know, he said he has a temper.
Yeah.
So don't piss him off, or
right.
else he'll become violent.
It's crazy. And you know what? I mean, a lot of times violence like that spreads within families, like not always, but oftentimes. So if the
yeah.
father was known to be kind of rude, crude, violent, whatever it happens to be, you
right.
know, unfortunately,
well, you,
like
it's learned behavior.
Right. It wouldn't be surprising if the son picked up on that too.
But also the sister-in-law, his sister-in-law
mm-hmm.
did say that he was in Vietnam fighting, and he was never the same after that.
Yeah.
Apparently, he did bring some pictures home of skeletons and corpses with heads cut off of them. Like,
that's,
that he kept those pictures.
I mean, that...
So effed up.
Yeah. I mean, that's weird. That's
why?
Weird. Why? Because that's not the... that's not the part of it that I'd want to remember. Like,
right.
I wouldn't want to remember any of it, and
probably
I certainly wouldn't be...
Probably the beautiful jungle scenery.
Exactly.
If
exactly. The absolutely incredible landscape, and maybe the kindness of the locals, but, like,
that's
I,
it.
Yeah. Like, I'm not coming home with pictures of headless corpses.
Right.
So
he obviously wasn't right in the head.
There was definitely something going on. Definitely something going on. I mean, you don't kill your wife and then just keep living there.
Right.
So a couple of interesting details that came up when I kind of looked into the house itself. According to, like, the public records and stuff, it looks like the all of the articles and the show state that the property was purchased in foreclosure in 2005. Mm-hmm. However, I actually show that it went on and off the market between 2005 and 2007, and then was finally officially sold in 2007.
Oh.
So I don't really know what the story is there. It also looks like it was listed for sale most recently in 2008 for about $1.2 million, like just under $1.2 million.
Wow.
It did not sell.
Well, no one wants a house with a
yeah. I mean, that's exactly. Yeah. It's like a tough sell. So it definitely looks like between the point of the Heaths owning the property and the Wrights purchasing the property, it was definitely owned or occupied by a bunch of different parties. And, you know, as I mentioned, now it's definitely occupied by a tenant. So it looks like it's possibly still owned. I don't know. Maybe the Wrights still own it. It's definitely possible. So I think it's listed under an LLC, if I'm not mistaken, for like the tax purposes and stuff. So, I mean, I probably wouldn't want my name on it either.
Nope.
And yeah, I mean, it is really crazy because it's such a beautiful property.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was really kind of tainted by all of this.
Kind of.
Okay. It was definitely tainted by all of this. Be nice. No. yeah. So, I mean, that is our story for today. That was the story of Elizabeth Heath, obviously way too close to home for both of us. Hopefully you enjoyed it and all of the details. If you have any questions, any remarks, feedback, anything along those lines, definitely let us know. You can follow us on Instagram at The Real Crime Podcast.
And Facebook,
The Real Crime Podcast. We also have a Gmail account now set up, which is therealcrimepodcast@gmail.com. So send us an email. And what else? Oh, our Patreon is set up. So if you're curious about that, I finally fiddled with it a little bit. And it's definitely one of those things we're going to be adding to. We're designing like some car stickers and that kind of thing. And I'm going to start doing some mock-ups of t-shirts and all of that. So, you know, hopefully we'll have some merchandise and stuff for you guys eventually if you are interested and you can sport it and be like, look at me, I'm so cool.
I'll be head to toe.
I know. I want to make some sweatpants for next winter. I'm going to make some tank tops for the summertime. I'm just going to be all about the Real Crime Podcast. So yeah, definitely. Reach out. We would love to hear from you. Feel free to start conversations on the Facebook page. And if you didn't respond to the poll about our last episode, Charlie Hope, definitely do. You can leave a little emoticon thing in the comments on either our Instagram or on our Facebook page and let us know what you think happened to him. Both of us are firmly of the mindset that he's in witness protection.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do like the fact that I was able to put a tiny little alligator for like people who think he was dropped in the swamps. So I know. All right, guys, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.